Hello, and welcome to Primecast, Corpcast episode 51. Today, we will be discussing Transformers, interviewing Transformers, Dark of the Moon. I'd like to introduce you to executive producer James Caswell, who transforms into an a-hole in disguise.
And he's Doug Zeitlin, and there is no disguise. He is an a-hole. Back in the golden days of cartoons, you know, the 70s and 80s, there was a push by a lot of toy companies, specifically Hasbro, to put cartoons based on their toys on TV. These cartoons would essentially serve as a half an hour commercial for these toys. Now, the only way they were able to get away with this was to make sure that they included A, public service announcement at the end of every episode, and B, the networks couldn't show a commercial for that particular toy line immediately before or after going into the commercial break. Of these cartoons, one of the most popular was, of course, Transformers. It was based on that popularity that we have these movies today. As part of that huge push in the 80s, Transformers was released in 1984 and lasted for 10 years. This included a Transformers The Movie, which took the Transformers back to Cybertron. The Transformers movie took place kind of in the middle of that run, which meant that a lot of the stories set after that point were placed on Cybertron as opposed to on Earth.
There was also a brief time period where they had recut the original Transformers and interspersed CGI cutscenes. These recut episodes ran for the latter part of the 10 years that Transformers was originally on the air.
In 1994, though, they stopped airing episodes of Transformers with the vehicles and instead brought out a new version of Transformers called Beast Wars. These were all digital cartoons and had the robots assuming animal forms in, I guess, what would be considered prehistoric times, rather than vehicles in present day. Beast Wars had two seasons spread over about 3 years, followed by Beast Machines, which again took place back on Cybertron and ran a couple more years. This made Transformers being on TV until the year 2000.
After the year 2000, Transformers did continue to live on. There was a god-awful show called Transformers Armada.
It was Japanese anime, and for those of you who really like anime, you probably still would have hated this. It took the original Autobots, Decepticons, and the artwork just, when you're used to stories being told in the 80s cartoon format, having it thrown into anime is a little bit jarring to the system.
I'd go a step further and just say the show itself was just jarring. I don't think you needed to be a fan of the original to be disappointed with the new one.
Fortunately, that one lasted only about a year before it was canceled, and it looked as though the Transformers were just going to live on in comic books until 2007.
Yes, the first of three Michael Bay Transformers movies came out in 2007. It was aptly named Transformers.
Now, Transformers was your typical Michael Bay film. Lots of explosions, very little storyline. If you're going to see a Michael Bay film, you pretty much have to expect that there's going to be a lot of explosions and very little storyline.
I heard an interview with Michael Bay once that basically he said, "Don't give me a script, I'll give you a movie with a lot of action in it." And he said that with some pride.
Yeah, I think he believes that a script just kind of holds him back. Also, as a personal flaw in the movie, one of the things that I always loved about the old cartoons was the wide variety of characters. By the time you got to year 5, there were almost hundreds of Autobots.
Well, you gotta remember, they were trying to sell a toy.
True, but the cartoon did a pretty good job of at least taking 20 or 30 of those 100 and giving them a voice, giving them a character, which is kind of an impressive thing to be able to pull off. The movie had 5 Autobots, only 2 of which you kind of sat there at the end going, "Okay, I know who these Autobots are." And that was Optimus Prime and Bumblebee. Admittedly, they were 2 of the most popular ones in the cartoon, but they're not the only Autobots.
I didn't bother to go see this in the movie theater. I waited till this came out on DVD. I knew exactly what to expect from it, and it provided me with what I wanted. It had guns, it had car chases, and it had explosions. It's what I look for in a movie. So I was like, why bother spending the money to see it in the movie theater when I can just see it on DVD?
I did see it in the theater, and was sorry that I didn't wait until it came out on DVD. Now, that being said, when I feel in the mood to see a movie about guns, car chases, and explosions, it's one of the ones that I'll grab and pop into the DVD player. But if I'm looking for anything vaguely resembling a storyline, well, I've got an entire shelf of movies that are much higher on the list.
I'd like to say something bad about the movie, because it's Michael Bay. But truthfully, I don't have bad feelings about this movie. Part of that is probably because I didn't spend $10 to go see it in the movie theater.
I could have sworn that you did just say something bad about it. You said it was done by Michael Bay.
That goes for any movie that's done by Michael Bay. Qualifying it as this is a movie by Michael Bay, I really don't have anything bad to say about it. It was entertainment. I don't have anything good to say about it. It was entertainment. I got exactly what I wanted. So what if it's not going to earn an Academy Award? Anybody who's ever listened to this Torpcast knows exactly how we feel about the Academy.
One of the other things that kind of caught me off guard about the first movie, and the second movie, and the third movie to some degree, is that the Autobots are significantly outnumbered by the quote-unquote human companions. In the cartoon, yeah, there were two or three humans running around to give it the human feel. But in all of the movies, the Autobots are significantly outnumbered by human counterparts. Which, I guess, if you're telling stories about guns, car chases, and explosions, having the robots be at risk, it doesn't give that human factor. So you want to throw humans in who could potentially be caught in the explosions or the gunfights or the car chases to give it more of that human feel. But I'm sorry, it's a story about giant robots. The key feature should be the giant robots.
I think Bay succeeded in that. The story was about the robots. Well, it also had Shia LaBeouf and Megan Fox, but let's face it, Megan Fox was not there for her acting talent, and Shia LaBeouf was really not there for his acting talent either. I don't know why he was there.
I'll come back to Megan Fox in a moment. In 2009, the sequel, Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, was released. Even though this one has been kind of panned by the internet community as being far worse, I actually enjoyed it a little bit more than the first one. But that's because at least it felt like they were trying to tell something vaguely resembling a story. Not a very good story, but some story nonetheless.
I can't remember if I bothered to see this one in the movie theater or not. I got about the same as I got out of the first one. It was guns, car chases, and explosions, and not much more, despite the fact that you felt that there was some more story. I agree with the critics and the internet community that Michael Bay is a closet racist, or maybe not so closet.
Yeah, after seeing this one, I don't think he's closet anything. Closet racist? No. He's out there. Closet sexist? No. He's out there.
Speaking specifically to Revenge of the Fallen, I mean, he had these two robots that were hip-hop and spoken jive, or whatever you want to call it. And they were pretty much just enormous. Insert stereotype here.
They were almost as bad of a stereotype as Jar Jar Binks.
What gets me, I think we can get to this more in the review of Dark of the Moon, but I think he was actually worse in this movie because he was able to take other stereotypes. Like, I'm not just going to be racist against one color or skin. I'm going to pick anybody and stereotype them. For some reason, one of the Transformers had a Scottish brogue.
And liked to scrap. And his partner was Australian, and he liked to scrap. You kind of sit there and go, really? They have Scots on Cybertron? And they act like a bunch of drunks who like to brawl in the streets? Really?
I heard somebody once ask at a convention why Doctor Who always had a British accent. And the answer that was given by the panel was, he has a Gallifreyan accent. British people just sound Gallifreyan. I can't work this quite funny repartee into why Transformers speak in jive, why they speak with the Scottish brogue, why they speak with the Australian accent.
Or why their counterparts on Cybertron seem to have all of their worst possible traits. Although I will say, at least he didn't have the Irish one being drunk.
Do we have anything else to say about Revenge of the Fallen before we move on too far?
Too late. But while they did add some new bots, they really were just background, and it still was Optimus Prime and Bumblebee. The rest of the cars just kind of blended into the background, and you didn't really care about them because they were just background. And this becomes pertinent in the third movie as well, because, again, you have Bumblebee, Optimus Prime, and the new character Sentinel Prime that take front and center, and the rest of them are just kind of background. Which means that when something happens to one of these background ones, you're supposed to be jarred by it, but in the end you just kind of go, which one was that?
Something that I found kind of interesting was, in the first two movies, there really couldn't be a lot of death of the Transformers. They had to be preparing for the next movie. In The Dark of the Moon, Michael Bay and Shia LaBeouf have both said this is the end for them. This was also the end for a lot of Decepticons and Autobots. It was carnage galore. As I said, this was something that was really missing from Transformers and Revenge of the Fallen, because even though that there were characters who didn't make it all the way through the movie, most of the characters made it all the way through the movie.
And even some who died came back to make it through the rest of the movie.
Dark of the Moon? Well, dark is a very apt name for it.
Talking about Dark of the Moon, I will say that I think that this is probably the best of the three. Again, primarily because they're actually trying to tell a story. It's a weird feeling to have a Bay movie that has a story that isn't necessarily just a couple of people making kissy face on the screen. There was some of that there too, but that wasn't all of the story.
I would definitely agree that this was superior to either of the first two movies. It's one I'm glad that I saw in the movie theater. It was actually quite good. I also agree with you the fact that there was a story in this movie. I wish it had been an original story. The reason it's good is because it was taken from a really good story. It's essentially Lord of the Rings, which I know that you could argue Lord of the Rings is basically just a hero's journey, but we've already had a hero's journey in Transformers and Revenge of the Fallen. This was really not just a hero's journey. This was Lord of the Rings. Pause now if you have not seen the movie. We're going to get into spoilers, so if you don't like spoilers, this is the time to pause. You've got Optimus Prime, who's essentially Gandalf. You've got the new Sentinel Prime, who's essentially Saruman. And Megatron is Sauron. You got Shia LaBeouf as Frodo, and it's basically Frodo collecting his fellowship, because he starts off, he's all alone in his Shire, and then he's collecting his fellowship. He's collecting Bumblebee, he collected Lennox from the military, Epps from the military, Agent Simmons from Section 7, his girlfriend Carly. I mean, he's really assembling the fellowship, and then they're going into Mordor, which happens to be the city of Chicago, and he has to destroy the one pillar which controls them all.
Yeah, when you look at it carefully, it really is Fellowship of the Rings. And as big of a fan as I am about developing a story to go along with the guns, car chases, and explosions, this was a 2.5+ hour movie. About an hour into it, I was kind of sitting there going, okay, it's about time to get to some of the explosions. The story really felt like it was dragging. There were characters who were introduced just because they managed to sign that particular actor and they wanted to find a part for him.
John Malkovich.
John Malkovich is a great example. He did a great job of playing this psycho boss, but in the end, his actual contribution to the story was a joke. Literally. It was him trying to get into a boxing match with Bumblebee. That was the end of his scenes, and who tries to pick a fist fight with a giant robot?
And you end up with the giant robot tickling him on the floor. It was a little painful to watch, and again, if John Malkovich said he wanted to be in my movie, I'd write him a scene. I have respect for John Malkovich, but you could cut every scene with John Malkovich out of this movie, and it wouldn't change the story at all.
If anything, it might help it move along. Now, on the flip side, there was a new character introduced named Dutch, who was played by Alan Tudyk. For those of you who are on the same geek level as Doug and myself, that's Wash from Firefly. who I haven't seen him in a single thing that I haven't loved him in. And again, he plays an utter nutcase, but he actually contributes to the storyline and has some really funny moments.
Actually, some of the best lines in the movie are his one-liners.
There were a lot of places in this movie that I laughed because I knew that this was the place that I was supposed to laugh. Then there were Alan's lines that legitimately made me laugh. Speaking of standout performances, Rosie Huntington-Whiteley steps in as the new girlfriend, which, okay, this was about 3 steps better than what I had initially suggested when I heard that Megan Fox wasn't going to be coming back. And that was to take a cutout of Megan Fox and put her on the set, and it would have about the same amount of acting talent as Megan Fox.
Why do you insult cutouts like that?
You're right, it would have more acting talent. But Rosie is the perfect example of exactly how sexist Bay really is. Actually, you know what? I'm going to back up a second. I don't think Bay is a sexist, or maybe even a racist. I think he's a 9-year-old boy trapped in an adult's body. He finds humor in what most people would consider to be racist humor. He'll go out of his way to look at the female form in as little clothing as possible. He must really be a butt man, because in both Revenge of the Fallen and Dark of the Moon, the very first thing that you see of the female lead is a shot that runs from her feet up her bare legs to her barely covered tush. I'm not complaining, mind you, but it is a bit sexist.
Well, you're also a 9-year-old trapped in a man's body.
I'm not. Nah. But he made it very clear from that very first scene what it is that he was expecting from his female leads. Sex appeal. And in the world of Hollywood, Megan Fox is hot, but she's not the only hot one out there. Shia LaBeouf was Shia LaBeouf. I mean, he's another one of those actors that they hire him because they want Shia LaBeouf. They don't necessarily want a character actor. I'm wondering how much longer his 15 minutes are going to last. If he's not going to do any more Transformer movies, I'd say he's probably got about another minute and a half.
Oh, he's still talking about Indiana Jones 5.
How about Indiana Jones 5, where they resurrect Henry Jones Sr. by sacrificing Henry Jones III?
Hey, there's the movie.
To wrap up about the movie, how many pens in the pen protector, Doug?
I'd actually probably give this 3 pens in the pocket protector. It had story, it had action. It was a real successful summer blockbuster.
I'm going to go 2.5 pens out of 4, just because I can't bring myself to give it 3. There are other movies that have come out this summer so far that I think deserve the 3 more. Now, just because Bay and LaBeouf say that this is the last of their Transformers movies, doesn't mean that it'll be the last of the Transformer movies. Likewise, Transformers can still be found on TV. New episodes of Transformers Prime are on the Hub. It is written by the same guys who wrote the second movie, Roberto Orci and Alex Kurtzman. If those names sound familiar to you, they should. They also wrote the Star Trek movie, Watchmen, Legend of Zorro, and Mission Impossible 3. Transformers Prime only has 5 lead Autobot characters, with 4 humans, 3 of which are teenagers. But then again, in the original show, it was 2 teenagers and a grown man, so that part doesn't necessarily throw me off. It's the 5 Autobots again that I really wish they'd introduce more Autobots.
Hasbro probably has the same feelings.
But to its benefit, it tells more story in 1 half-hour episode than the first 2 movies told put together. And I also think that it's a better reboot than the Hub's other 80s franchise, G.I. Joe Renegades.
Yeah, I watched the first 1/2 hour of G.I. Joe Renegades. I still want that 1/2 hour of my life back.
Yeah, you and me both. I didn't think anything would do more injustice to the G.I. Joe franchise than the live-action movie did, and then they came out with Renegades. So that being said, if you haven't seen the movie, go catch the bargain matinee and be prepared for about 1.5 hours of good entertainment and a 2.5-hour movie.
As always, we thank you for listening to TwerpCast. We encourage your feedback. Please write Jim at twerponline.net. We can also be found on Facebook, MySpace, Zanga, and Twitter.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Torpcast is a production of Timewell Electronic Recording Productions, copyright 2011.
Don't feel ashamed to see the Transformers. Everyone else is doing it.